Hello, it's top of the hour. I want to welcome you to another lesson in the Lead Yourself First program. I'm Tom Cooper, and I'm so glad you've joined me for this lesson. Today, we're talking about curiosity. Lead Yourself First is your personal growth program. As Dorothy Parker said, the cure for boredom is curiosity, and there is no cure for curiosity. Is curiosity important for your career and your personal growth? That's what today's lesson's about. I've spent the last 20 years learning and researching what makes some people great at leading and influencing others. And this program is designed to bring you the best information, the best ideas, skills, and tools that are going to help you today and help you every day. These tools in your toolkit are going to help you build the things you need to build. And I was about 30 before I began studying these things in earnest, and it took me several years to hit my stride as a leader. I can't help but think that I could have learned more if I'd only started earlier. And that's why I'm excited for you about starting today and about what we're talking about today. Now, before we jump into this lesson, I always ask, how are you going to act when we're done? When we get to the end of this lesson on curiosity, how are you going to apply? What's something you could change, or what's something you could teach? I love to say we're a river, not a reservoir. Don't try and store up all the knowledge and then teach. Teach as you're learning. It's part of the journey. Now, I've been looking forward to today's lesson. I look forward to it because I have seen so many people die from boredom at work. I worked with one guy. He'd worked for years to reach a level. He finally made it to the position of director in the company, and then he just stopped working. I mean, just stopped. He used to sit in his big office at work, and he would read the newspaper. His boss tried to assign work to him, but he never did any of the work. The guy was bored. Somewhere along the line, he had lost his curiosity, and ultimately, it led to a long season of struggle for him. Now, over the next few minutes, we're going to talk about some things you can put to practice right away about how your curiosity is linked to your leadership. And if you're feeling stuck or frustrated or bored at work, if you're feeling that you're not able to move ahead, today's lesson is for you. And you're going to leave this lesson with some specific things you can do immediately to help yourself. Now, maybe you're going to want to do more with this topic. And if that's you, I promise you, at the end of this lesson, I'm going to share with you a way you can do that. Fair enough? Have you ever heard the idea that there's a difference between 10 years of experience and 1 year of experience repeated 9 times? I think that's true. Like the director who stopped working, he was passing time, but he was not growing. And that guy and I reported to the same boss. And I was very frustrated by the fact that he was so difficult to deal with, and he never actually did any work. I finally asked my boss about it, and he said, well, Tom, I can either invest a ton of energy in finding a way to get that guy to do something, or get him off my team completely, or I can invest my time in the people on my team who actually produce, and I pick you over him. I think looking back, my boss could have done both, but I think my boss got worn down by the bureaucracy and the slow pace and that culture that would accept bad performance, and he just decided that he couldn't change things. And I did work for that organization for a long time, and I can tell you that I can understand how he made that choice. And that said, it wasn't only the team and the company that lost out when that guy stopped working. I think the largest loser in that deal was him. He had stopped building relationships. He'd stopped doing projects that mattered to the business. He'd stopped learning new things. And the company let it go on so long that I think he forgot how to do those things altogether. And he was stuck. And eventually the company did decide to let him go. And when they let him go, he was mad. What I don't think he understood was that while he was coasting, the world had passed him by. Now, I watched him from afar after he left. He was unemployed for 2 years. He had forgotten how to work, and he had let his skills deteriorate so much that he had little to offer the marketplace when he was in need of going back to the marketplace. Now, this is absolutely an extreme example, but it's relevant because I think at the core, he had just lost his curiosity. He lost his openness and his wonder about technology, about people, and about business problems. Fundamentally, it's that curiosity that helps us make a key difference in the world. Albert Einstein said, "I have no special talents. I am only passionately curious. I have no special talents. I'm only passionately curious." This is the guy who changed our understanding of physics. He had no special talents. The guy who's looked up to as being one of the primary management consultants in U.S. history said, "My greatest strength as a consultant is to be ignorant and ask a few questions." Now, here are people who made a huge impact on the world, and they didn't say, "I know it all." Instead, they said, "I will ask questions." Curiosity sets us apart. It helps us consider new ideas, new ways of thinking. Curiosity is what caused the first person to ask, "What if I put hot sauce on that?" Curiosity is what caused the first person to ask, "Why does that substance explode? And could we harness that explosion to do something useful?" Our curiosity allows us to make progress, to shake things up, to make positive changes in the world. Now, that said, I think we need to get one thing straight. It's not that Einstein or Drucker remained ignorant. Each of them persisted and used their curiosity to grow their knowledge. Being ignorant can be helpful if you're looking to bring a new perspective to a situation. And sometimes curious people get shut down by the people around them. Sometimes that's bad, sometimes it's not so bad. Let me give you an example. I had several times in my career where I hired a relatively inexperienced person for my team. Ramit was a young guy who was ambitious, and he had an infective curiosity. Why did we do it this way? Why did it take so long? Why did we need to involve so many people? Wasn't there a better way? Now, all those questions are really good questions, but they need to be included in context. If you're new to the organization or new to the line of business or the set of skills or processes you need to execute, that's not the time for you to offer your insights and suggestions for improvement. It's not that you can't bring great things to the team. It's that you haven't proven yourself yet. I told Ramit, master our broken processes first, then offer suggestions for improvement. And I'll tell you, he didn't like that suggestion on my part. Was I being closed-minded or ageist? What if he had a brilliant idea that could have really helped and I just rejected it because of his youth and inexperience? Well, I want to bring up an idea here that might be helpful. G.K. Chesterton essentially said we shouldn't tear down a fence until we understood why it was built in the first place. Before we recommend changing the process, we need to first understand what the process requires of us, and we need to perform that well. And why should we do that? Because somebody thought about this problem, and somebody came up with a set of steps that worked to solve that problem. That somebody probably understood that business problem better than the person who was just starting out. Let's say you're tasked with designing a car from scratch, and you don't have a whole lot of automotive experience. As you begin, you learn the cost of a car is significantly increased by the cost of airbags, collision avoidance technology, rear view cameras, and crumple zones. Dramatically increased. That these things also add weight, which reduces fuel economy. And you know that fuel economy is important, and that lowering the purchase price makes the car more attractive to buyers. So you might suggest that you just stop adding those things in. After all, you might have driven a car for a few years and never have been involved in an accident, and maybe not even seen an accident. But each of those items has been added to cars to address needs that are not obvious to the person who first encounters the problem of how do you design a car. So before you tear down a fence, redesign a process, or chuck things out that look like they just don't matter, it's probably wise to be curious about the processes that already exist and about how you can become more efficient at adapting yourself to those processes. And once you've mastered these steps, then your suggestions about improvements are more likely to be welcomed. So let's say you're already mastering the steps in the processes today. Let's say you're trusted to follow them and get things done. What if you've done that for so long that you've lost your curiosity? Let me share with you some ideas that can help you get your curiosity groove back. And these ideas come from John Maxwell's book, The 15 Invaluable Laws of Growth. Number one, do you believe that you could become curious or more curious? When it comes to brain science, we know there's this thing called neuroplasticity. It's a big word, but it has to do with the human ability to rewire our brains. It doesn't matter how long you've been doing it a certain way. It does not matter how old you are. We can all learn to do new things. One person who inspires me when it comes to neuroplasticity is my uncle. After a career as a civil engineer, he retired to be able to enjoy teaching people how to fly airplanes. He worked part-time in his retirement for many years, flying regularly and loving every minute of it. All that changed one fateful day when he began to feel an extreme pain in his left arm. Doctors began to investigate, and they discovered he was suffering from a disease that was quickly killing his arm, and if they didn't solve that, it would likely take his life. He was rushed to the operating room, and by the time he was prepped for surgery, the doctors had to remove his left arm at the shoulder in order to save his life. It's pretty severe stuff. Here's a left-handed guy who's retirement age, and now he has no left arm. He can't fly unless he passes an FAA flight physical, and he would have to demonstrate his ability to fly an aircraft with his remaining non-dominant hand. There are a lot of reactions my uncle could have had in that situation, but I'm impressed, inspired even, by his choice. He became curious about whether he could do it. Could he overcome these significant difficulties to be able to return to his passion for teaching and passion for flying? He was able to leverage neuroplasticity and his significant stubbornness, I might add, to develop new pathways, new ways of thinking, to allow him to overcome the challenges he was facing. And today he is certified by the FAA to fly with his prosthetic arm. He's learned new ways to do everything, from buttoning a shirt to driving and even flying planes. Can you learn to be curious? Even if there are severe impediments in front of you, I think you can. Number two, have a beginner's mindset. That's exactly what Drucker was talking about when he said he was ignorant and he asked questions. It's like the little girl who made her mom crazy by asking her question after question after question. Finally, her mother was exasperated and said, "Stop asking! Curiosity killed the cat." After a few quiet minutes of thinking, the little girl asked, "Well, what did the cat want to know?" The fact is, if you are looking for innovation, experts cannot provide that. They already know 1,000 reasons it won't work, but approaching with a beginner's mindset allows you to question the things that, quote, everyone knows, unquote. Number three, make why your favorite word. Legendary interviewer Larry King said, "I never learn anything when I'm talking. I ask short, simple questions like who, what, where, when. They work very well. They allow the other person to speak because they're short, and they make it easy for the other person to answer because they're straightforward." People with a victim's mindset say, "Why me?" not because they want to know, but because they want to feel sorry for themselves. John Maxwell wrote a book called Good Leaders Ask Great Questions. Invest in your seeking. Ask why as often as you can. Number four, spend time with curious people. You become the average of the five people you spend the most time with. Who's in your inner circle? Who's the most creative person you know? Do you spend time with that person, and what can you learn from that person? Number five, learn something new every single day. Don't just look to endure your day. Look for the things that are part of the adventure. Who can you meet? What can you learn from them? What can you discover, inspect, or improve about what you're doing? John Maxwell says we should decide intentionally to learn something every day. We keep our eyes and ears open as we go through the day, and probably most importantly, reflect on our days so we can let the things that we learned bubble up to the top of our awareness. I've talked about this many times before, and I keep mentioning it because reflection is powerful and valuable. John says experience is not the best teacher. Evaluated experience is the best teacher. Number six, and this is a good one. You won't want to miss this one. Number six says, partake in the fruit of failure. Partake in the fruit of failure. What is that about? Fruit from failure? A while back, I decided I wanted to get a pickup truck. And I had gotten some good deals from buying cars at auction, and I thought I'd get a great deal if I worked with a friend to try something new. My friend had had success buying cars that had been damaged in collisions and then sold by the insurance company at insurance auctions. He said he'd done it over and over again and had great results. I'm always ready to get a great value, and it seemed like a fine idea to me. Well, how did it turn out for me? This process took longer, cost more, and never actually delivered a working vehicle to me. I ended up losing thousands of dollars and wasting 10 months of my life before I finally got rid of that truck. I'll never do that again, right? Well, I'll admit that I'm not super excited about trying that for my next vehicle purchase, but what did I learn? Well, A, I learned a bunch of things I'll do differently the next time I try it. B, I learned there are different standards for repairs, and that my standard tends to be maybe higher than the other people's standards about the quality of repairs that need to be done. C, I learned that someone who is well-intentioned and who had been successful doing something doesn't guarantee it's going to work out every time for me. And D, I learned I could try something new, and it won't kill me to lose some money in the process. Can I apply those lessons in other car purchases? Absolutely. Can I apply those lessons in areas other than car purchases? Absolutely. Failure is a part of my curiosity journey. Failure's my friend. Failure's my friend. I'll say it again. Failure is my friend. As long as I'm learning from it, failure is a good thing, and failure is essential to my progress. Number 7, stop looking for the one right answer. Stop looking for the one right answer. The fact is there's more than one way to do it, and different is not necessarily wrong. It's often merely different. That's something that is reinforced to me as I work with teams using DISC assessments. How a high D solves a problem is often very different from the approach that an S-styled person uses. Neither's right or wrong, they're just different. The D-styled person thinks in terms of tasks and speed, and the S-styled person thinks in terms of people and process. I love what the author of the book, A Whack on the Side of the Head, said. He said, almost every advance in art, cooking, medicine, agriculture, engineering, marketing, politics, education, and design has occurred when someone challenged the rules and tried another approach. If we were at one time successful in business by mailing marketing postcards or using fax machines, those might have been great approaches at the time. Today, we probably need a different approach, and that's what we're talking about. Now let's talk about number 8. This is a hard one for me. Get over yourself. If you're going to ask questions and allow yourself to fail because you want that fruit that comes from failure, you're going to do things that don't work. And when they don't work, you are taking a risk that you might look foolish. That's hard for me. I was teased a lot as a kid, and I was mocked for my shortcomings. And it imprinted upon me a desire not to be in that situation again, a desire not to fail, because I didn't want to give anyone help who might want to make fun of me. But have you ever watched a baby learn to walk? I've watched 7 of them in my home doing that. And they see adults doing it, and they pull up on a table or sofa, and immediately they fall down. If they were mocked and belittled for that failure, they'd probably be stuck in a seated position for the rest of their lives. The fact is that it's only the process for learning to walk, the only process that works successfully, involves failure, repeated failure, larger and larger failure until we overcome. And that's the way it is for just about everything. Along the way, fearing what others think or say is irrelevant to the outcome. Fearing what others think or say is irrelevant to the outcome. I have to remind myself it's okay to be ignorant, and it's okay to have others question my lack of knowledge. At least I'm trying to learn. Number 9, get out of the box. Get out of the box. And there's so much I should say about this, but I'll have to leave it at this. Innovation can be amazingly valuable, even when other people think you're crazy. In the 1860s, there was a surgeon who was shocked by the number of people who died after surgery, and he decided to apply scientific principles to address the problem. Unfortunately, at the time, most surgeons were impatient, and they were ignorant of scientific principles. And about that time, about 50% of the patients who needed surgery would ultimately die from the procedure. Dr. Lister documented an approach where only 1 of 11 patients died from infection. And it's amazing to me that routine application of science to surgery didn't happen until almost 100 years later. Lister's breakthrough was that he believed in germ theory, and if he could apply antiseptics to the wound and the environment during surgery, he could reduce infections that led to death. This was far outside the mainstream of thinking at the time. Lister broke the mold. He moved outside the normal way of things, the way things were done. So how does that apply to you? You might not be a doctor, right? But if you understand the problems well, you might be able to apply ideas from other places that could help you. Maybe if you're a software person, you should look at manufacturing for innovation. Or if you're in the retail space, maybe you ought to look at wholesale or online online transaction type things to help you think about that. Maybe you look at service businesses or another field entirely and try to find a way to apply what they are doing in your work. Get out of your box. And number 10, enjoy your life. Tom Peters wrote, "The race will go to the curious, the slightly mad, and those with an unsaturated passion for learning and daredevilry. The race will go to the curious, the slightly mad, and those with an unsaturated passion for learning and daredevilry. When we see life as an experiment and one we can intentionally enjoy, it changes our perspective." So that is 10 ways to increase your curiosity. Now we're getting ready for your personal action plan. As you're preparing for that, I want to go over what we talked about in today's lesson. My wife says, "Bored people are boring. Curiosity leads you to significant benefits, more opportunities, more rewards, and more fun. Don't let yourself be bored. Create more curiosity in your life." In today's lesson, we listed 10 ways that John Maxwell defined that you can increase your curiosity. I'm going to go over these 10 questions again. I want you to think about how you can use them to increase your curiosity. Which one or two sticks out to you? What's one thing you can do with that question? For example, as I'm going over these 10 ideas again, what if one of them sticks out to you and you wrote it on a sticky note and you put that sticky note on your mirror where you're going to see it every day? And what if you asked yourself that question one question every day before you started work? So here are the questions. Number one, do you believe that you can be curious? Do you believe that you can be curious? Number two, do you have a beginner's mindset? Do you have a beginner's mindset? Number three, have you made why your favorite word? Why not? Have you made why your favorite word? Why not? Number four, do you spend time with curious people? Do you spend time with curious people? Number five, do you set out to learn something new every day? Do you set out to learn something new every day? Number six, do you partake in the fruit of failure? Do you partake in the fruit of failure? That was a hard one for me. Number seven, have you stopped looking for the right answer? There's more than one way to do it. Have you stopped looking for the right answer? There is more than one way to do it. Number eight, have you gotten over yourself? Have you gotten over yourself? Number nine, do you get out of the box? Do you get out of the box? And number 10, are you enjoying life? So for your action plan, take one of these ideas and decide how you can apply, change, or teach it. Now, you might be interested in learning more or spending some more time on this. I've got a 4-session study on John Maxwell's book called Good Leaders Ask Great Questions. I love this book. It is filled with lots and lots of different ideas about ways you can improve the quality of questions that you ask. And when you learn to ask the right questions, it improves your understanding, it improves your performance, and I would love to do that with you or with your team. The cost for this 4-session coaching study on this book is $249 a person. In these 4 lessons, you're going to learn some great questions. You're going to begin to ask better questions that can increase your curiosity. The program includes an electronic study guide, and the interactive coaching sessions allow you to explore the book more deeply than you would on your own. You're going to leave those sessions with practical ideas you can put into practice immediately. Sound interesting? Drop me a line, tom@brighthillgroup.com, tom@brighthillgroup.com, and we'll get it set up. Thank you for being here for today's Lead Yourself First lesson, and I look forward to hearing from you next time.